So, may we start?
Let's get started. We're listening to WMNF Tampa, WMNF 88.5 FM. Welcome to the afternoon.
One, two, three, four. It's time to start. My time to start. They hope that it goes the way it's supposed to go. There's fear in them all, but they can't let it show. They're underprepared, but that may be enough. The budget is large, but still, it's not enough.
So may we start.
Time to start.
Baba, Baba, I want to be sedated. I have no idea, dear listeners, why I chose to play this song today. Welcome to Art in Your Ear. Welcome to the afternoon. Welcome to WMNF 88.5, the best station in the nation. I'm super excited to be sitting here in the studio with friend Jade Dellinger. Say hello.
Hello.
Oops, I don't have the right. Which mic are you on? There you go. Now try again.
Hello.
There
Thanks
we go.
Nice
hello.
To see you, Joel.
Mark, it's Mark. I want to say Mark Mothersbaugh and
Beattie Wolf.
And Beattie Wolf are supposed to be, I think, joining us on the phone. Hello.
Hello there.
Hello. And so we are here. Jade, you've, of course, been on the air before. Mark, you've been on this show before a while ago, a long time ago. And BT, so excited to welcome you to the airways of WMNF. We are going to be talking about today Postcards for Democracy, which is a show that is at the Bob Rauschenberg Gallery. Excuse me, down or anywhere. It could be up for people listening. I'm not sure. But it's at Florida Southwestern State College in Fort Myers. And the show is pretty darn exciting. So thank you, everybody, for showing up.
Our pleasure.
Sweet. And dear listeners, if you want to get in touch, you can text us at 813-433-0885. And you can send us an email at dj@wmnf.org. I'm kind of interested. I think the origin story to Postcards for Democracy is pretty interesting. And I feel like there is a group of people that were all sort of on the same page in the summer of 2020. Mark, can you sort of take it and how this got started?
You know, Beattie and I had known each other for a while through mutual friends and kind of had been looking for something to do together. When the idea was being thrown out in Washington, D.C. that maybe we don't really need a post office anymore, we were both startled by that because we both love the post office and we both love our mailmen. So we just started talking, and I draw postcards every day for the last 40 some years. I draw on them. They're like my image bank and my lyric bank and idea bank. I keep everything there. And it was Beattie's idea. She said, "Hey, why don't we do this very simple project?" It turned out, you know, we thought, well, okay, so we mounted it on the internet, and we couldn't believe it. We started getting cards left and right. They're still coming in.
BT, what was it about the mail art, the idea of mail art, and the idea of sort of crowdsourcing the mail art that was important to you?
Well, I don't think either of us, you know, thought about it too much. It just seemed like it was the perfect kind of collective experience that everyone could get involved with that had a real meaningful impact, or that's what we were hoping, you know, that it would keep the awareness on USPS and everything that was going on there ahead of the election. But I think what ended up happening was just we saw so many people's sort of creative juices like being, you know, stirred by this project and realizing that obviously during lockdown we're all so disconnected, so isolated, you know, we're all a lot of the time on our phones, and you know, I feel like getting off those platforms and going back to physical communications, it brings you so much joy anyway. So I think people found a lot of joy in just sitting down and making a card and sending it in, and then it, you know, feeling like it was becoming part of something. I feel like there are a lot of things that obviously we do need to innovate and update, but some things we need to reclaim. And I think mail is one of those, you know, hidden in plain sight things that we often forget about. So it was a really wonderful project to kind of put the focus back on this service that if we don't use, we're going to lose.
Last May, May 2020, a local artist, Sarah Noreen, did a postcard project and sent postcards out to different people in St. Petersburg to have them create postcards and turned it into an art show. So there seems to have been this, it's partially let's save the post office, or bring awareness to the post office. Let's save the post office. But also, I think this idea of people contributing, because being so isolated throughout the, certainly the first few months of the pandemic were extremely isolating. And Sarah, like you guys, wanted, I think there's to be some connections happening with art, with a wonderful way to make connections, art. Jade, was this any part of your process when you first heard about this show and stuff, about when you were sort of trying to figure out how you wanted to do it at the Rauschenberg Gallery and what you wanted people to get out of it? I'm kind of wondering what the like priorities were for you and Mark and BT's work.
Yeah. Well, you know, I first brought Mark actually to Florida in the late 90s, in 1999, so 20 years ago. But and upon arriving at the Rauschenberg Gallery, you know, I extended invitations. We'd been in contact about, you know, possible projects. And, of course, knowing his long history and making postcard art and how that connected with all of this. And Bob Rauschenberg had connections to that. One of his close friends was Ray Johnson, who was, you know, founded the New York Correspondence School. So so this was kind of the ideal project. And also, we tend, because we're basically a one-room gallery, you know, at essentially a community college, we tend to do solo and or two-person exhibitions that are very site-specific, and that this certainly fit within that context. But what I loved most, in a way, not only about supporting the Postal Service, but this would be a really democratic thing. It's intrinsically democratic, as Marcus sort of said. But also, it gave everyone, thousands of people, the opportunity to show in the gallery. So that was one of the, and the response has been overwhelming. I mean, we've been rotating the exhibition, basically. So as new cards come in, we'll do another full-on installation
next
week.
That is something that is just amazing to me. And Mark, I think I saw somewhere in an interview you said that you've gotten thousands, or BT, you have received thousands of postcards?
That's correct, yeah.
How do you go through them?
The interesting thing is just how many of them, just the people like locked up, they wanted to get creative. And so they talk about everything in the cards. It's, you know, some of it's political, some of it's not political. It was all, you know, all spectrums, you know, it's like it wasn't just like one thought or one side. It was like we got things that constantly were impressing us, just even in the material. Mm-hmm. We got a coconut a couple months ago.
it will be in the next installation. So we're going to put the coconut in next week.
Is the coconut decorated or just a dressed coconut?
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. They painted the whole thing.
Wow.
It's gorgeous.
Wow. you know, I'm going to just take a sharp left turn here, because there's something on my mind a lot, and I just want to get these questions out of the way, because one of the things that has always fascinated me as in doing this show, which is directed towards pretty much every type of art making except for music, because there's so much else on a radio station that's music oriented. But one of my greatest pleasures is interviewing people who have who create in several different fields, and both of you are musicians, and both of you are visual artists and sculptors, I think, too. I'm not, if I remember correctly. So is there, can we talk a little bit about your art making in general terms, about everything you create, but then also in specific terms, if there are differences or similarities between if it's an audio version of your art making or a two-dimensional or three-dimensional version of your art making? What are some of the ways that you kick off creating things?
Well, I think for me, it was just always that art felt like this kind of 360-degree experience. You know, it's storytelling, and you kind of choose whichever medium or layers or field would best tell that story. So I never really got the idea of, you know, if you make music, then you can only be in the music box.
Right.
I think we often put ourselves in a lot of boxes from an early age and, you know, label ourselves and what we do. And I find those to be very limiting. So I kind of feel like if the intention is there, you know, whatever your intention is, and that's kind of governing what it is that you're doing and what you're pulling into a project, if that intention is almost like your compass in a way, But then keeping the parameters open to whatever inspires you, you know, so you can go into any different direction with any project, and it can become something that's, you know, blending music and art and science, or design, technology, and, you know, poetry. I just always thought that that's what art was. And there was no real, you know, there was no real one path or one direction that I saw particularly in the work that I wanted to create.
Have you been able to, if you get stuck with something or you're not sure which way to proceed, you can't see me, but I'm kind of like, does switching to another media, different medium help? Is that part of your practice, BT? Or, are you kind of moving forward on everything at once?
Yeah, I think for me, it's really like getting to the core of what is that vision? What is it you want to say? And then depending on what you want to say, you pull in things accordingly, you know. So you want to make a statement about, you know, you want to create the anti-stream. Well, what is the antithesis of streaming? Well, it's the quietest room on earth. It's a physical record player playing the album 24 hours on repeat. People can't shuffle. They can't interfere. But then, you know, pulling in live AR animations, you're bringing the lyrics and the artwork to life around the listener in that very ceremonial space, which was exactly how I felt when I was 7 opening up Abbey Road. It felt like, you know, this record just came to life around me. So you're creating this sort of modern-day Fantasia experience, which still feels very old-school ceremonial, based around a record player, but has this whole other layer to it. So I think when you know what it is that you want to say, you just keep kind of pulling that thread and seeing what feels like it would best tell that story.
Wow, that's wonderful. Mark, do you have the same experience, or is your experience in this different?
I'm a little older than Beatty, and I remember when artists were supposed to do one thing, you know, and even in music, you were supposed to be involved in one kind of music. But, you know, technology, you know, it's like the pop artists helped change that, the dot artists changed that, you know, with like art being about the idea first, and then how you execute the idea was secondary. And Devo was always that way. We were always sound and vision from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. We were art students. But nowadays, kids, they have total freedom. I mean, in their phone, you know, and I watched my kids do this 10 years ago when they were just little kids running around the house with an iPad and making films. You know, they were the editors, they were the directors, mm-hmm. they were the writers, they were the actors, they were conceptualizing it, they put the music on it, and they were just making these little films on a Saturday that then got thrown away. And it was just, they don't even think of art in the same way as I did when I was a kid. You know, they in their phone, you know, Beatty talks about Abbey Road, but like, you know, in the phones that artists have nowadays, there's more power and versatility than in Abbey Road Studio when the Beatles were recording there. You can record multi-tracks, you can record digitally, you can do all sorts of effects and everything. It's kind of a really great time to be an artist, I think.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just think for kids, it'd be so great. I wish I was a kid right now. I think this is such a great time to be an artist.
To ignore it. And I think, I mean, it seemed that in the 80s and 70s, 80s, sort of pre-digital, is the idea was trying to find things that maybe were sort of more obscure and bring them forward, but that was in an analog way. I think that, or to apply a specific way of rethinking about them. And now there's such a glut of stuff. It's been trying to find things and more, and the word is so overused, but to curate them out of the glut of stuff and bring them, narrow it down. Like in the analog is about expanding what you know, and it seems that digital is almost narrowing it down so you can focus on things. Dear listeners, we're speaking with, so excited to be speaking with everybody about Postcards for Democracy. Postcards for Democracy is a art show that is down at the, or up, wherever you are, at the Rauschenberg Gallery in in Florida, down here in Florida. And one of the things that, and it's in Fort Myers at the Florida Southwestern State College. So we've got Jay Dellinger here in the studio on the phone as B.T. Wolf and Mark Mothersbaugh, one of the Devo members, among many other things, also solo artist and done lots of different things. I want to go back and talk about the postcards and talk about art practice, because there is, of course, the idea that people have sent postcards in. I'm assuming that you guys have some artwork in the show at some point. What did you want, and this is for all three of you, what did you want this show, Postcards for Democracy, what did you want it to be for people who come to the gallery? It seems that there's some interactive things that people can do. Can we talk a little bit about that part?
Sure. Yeah. Well, Mark and Beattie kind of designed the context, obviously, and there are graphics that they've designed. They're posters. We've actually done now two billboard projects as well, that have been, you know, down in the Fort Myers area, Southwest Florida. But they've also designed some stamps. We've done a kind of small catalog in the form of a glassine envelope like you'd get at the post office with a souvenir sheet of stamps that they had designed, in a poster that has an interview on the back that we've done kind of talking about the genesis of the project. But there are a number of kind of interactive components. There's, an interview that we have commissioned Ross Harris, who is a filmmaker who did a kind of documentary that's about a 30-minute documentary. So Mark and Beattie are there sort of talking in the studio and going through cards and picking out some favorites, although they're all fantastic. And then there's also a little group of stamp machines that, vending machines that Mark and Beattie have designed strip stamps for, and they're in letterpressed little cardboard envelopes, and for a dollar and quarters, you can take away a souvenir in the form of some art from Mark and Beattie. So
that sounds fun. You know, the summer of 2020, all of 2020, okay, 2020 and 21, a little bit nuts, a little bit crazy, lots of stuff going on. There, of course, was the pandemic and COVID. And Mark, I remember reading around the time, contemporary, that you were sick, pretty sick, very sick with COVID. There was the civil rights, a strong civil rights movement, the Black Lives Matter, which also sort of segued into bringing attention to Indigenous and Asian and other populations. Of course, there was, political stuff going on. and then there was these attacks on institutions. And so it's kind of interesting when we have artists who are kind of, you think of artists as being anti-establishment in a lot of ways, but then to have artists turn around and say, here's an institution that we think is important to support. Here's an institution that we want to highlight and bring up. And I kind of want to also explore that a little bit about this effort to highlight what the USPS, what the United States Post Office does and can do, and through art, through people buying a stamp for, you know, a postcard stamp and putting it on there. Did you have any type of, was there any type of blowback, or was there any type of like really wonderful embrace of it? Were people surprised about this? It's just kind of like, wow, where did this come from?
Well, I'm not sure if this is exactly what you're asking, but it seems kind of interesting and relevant. Very early on, one of the directors, I think it was director of mail services at USPS, wrote to me saying, oh, this project's just fantastic, and how can we support? And, you know, this is just wonderful.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, and then it went silent, and I wonder why. I wonder who got appointed around that time. I heard from her yesterday again, saying, being sensitive, how it was sort of something to navigate, which is why, you know, we didn't hear from her for a number of months. But I think the fact that USPS was being politicized, that seems crazy to me. You know, it really is and should be a democratic service, you know, service for the people that anyone can, you know, use, that doesn't discriminate, And I think that's the part that we were really celebrating, because that's also how we feel about art. You know, we didn't want people to do sort of certain types of things. It was totally open. People could send whatever, however they wanted, and it would become part of the show. And I think that sense of just everyone having a voice and that being kind of heard and, you know, included, that collective energy part of it was something that I think both Mark and I felt was really, really key.
The regional postmaster in Southwest Florida did cautiously make, you know, pay us a visit, and then ended up loving the show, taking lots of photographs, which have now ended up in what is being sent out to 600,000 plus current and retired USPS employees in the form of their magazine, The Link. So they've done a big feature in The Link that is just coming out this month.
Well, I showed my mail carrier on my phone what was going on, you know, so he knew about it. And it's this young guy, I love him. It's this young black guy who just started, like now to have his first route. He's always been a fill-in. Now he has his first route. So I was showing him that and he's like, oh, my mom lives down there. Oh. So it was really funny, but he just was blown away by it. So yay, you know.
We've actually had quite a few, you know, either past or current USPS employees submitting postcards as well. So there's one that I love that is a beautiful little painting of a letter carrier's bag.
Aww.
And it says, "This is my bag. I'm at work." And on the back, it says, "Thank you so much for supporting us. We love your project."
Aww. What happens when all this stuff is done? Where do these postcards go?
Well,
I think the Smithsonian, but that's just me.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because the catalog that we've done has now been accepted into the Smithsonian's National Postal Museum, and we're talking about negotiating with them at the moment about also sending one of the stamp machines, and, you know, who knows, maybe there is some possibility of it making its way to the National Postal Museum, but it certainly continues to live on, and that was one of the discussions that we all had at the beginning of talking about the exhibition, about, you know, is this the end point, or should we continue this and encourage people to participate? Mm-hmm. So it's still not too late. We're going to rotate this out, you know, once again next week, and probably one more time before August 8th.
So where do people send stuff? I mean, is that something, I can put that up somewhere on our Facebook and on our show page. And God, that just reminded me of something. So I'm going to, again, while you figure out where you can put, where send stuff.
Mark can give us the address.
Mark, did you have that handy? Or, because I have another question that I can ask, which I will. When I am not an artist, let's just be really super clear. Not, you know, my talent is for appreciation. I am very good at appreciating things. But the one art class I ever took, it started off with a lot of rules and restrictions to help us learn how to do art. There was, we could only use 10 lines, or we had to draw a square, which used up four of our lines, so we only had 6 lines left and stuff like that. And it was just this really wonderful way to sort of explore how creative you could be with the rules. So this postcard project kind of reminds me of that you have this space. It's a limited space. I mean, people were doing it, but overall postcards are what, like 3x5 or 4x6, something like that. And I'm wondering if you all have used sort of those, if you have rules or limits or things that you put on yourself in your art creation that helps you or assists you in sort of working in ways that might be pushing yourselves past a little something. What do you do to make yourself go past a comfort zone in creating things?
Oh, well, for me, I've been doing artwork on cards, you know, that are oftentimes reused postcards. And since the early 70s, and about 2 weeks ago, I just finished, I put 100 of them in these red archival books, and I just finished book number 600 last week. So
60,000 kind of postcards.
Wow. Stuff, yeah.
but
do you go back to those?
As a matter of fact, I go back and I will sometimes rescan them and then shrink them and then write comments about them or interact with thoughts I had 30 years ago or 40 years ago. in the cards that I'm doing today, for instance.
Wow.
But it's gone the whole gamut. It's gone from being able to do anything I wanted to do on these cards because nobody paid attention and I never shared them with anybody. And I always figured these will always just be my private diary. So I got really wild with a lot of them. And then I had kids. And then it all of a sudden made me think different about my art and what I wanted to present.
Wait, when you said think different about your art when you had kids.
Yeah. It's like... I early on with my children, they encouraged me to become the art teacher on a TV show called Yo Gabba Gabba.
Oh, yeah.
And then I had a fan base that I'd be standing in a grocery store and there'd be a little kid in a baby stroller that would spit out their binky and go, Yo Gabba Gabba! And their mom would be looking around at the magazine racks and trying to figure out why they're saying that. And they wouldn't know, but...
That would have been my god kids, too.
So something about the fan base opening up, it made me feel like I wanted to be more particular about things I said and less sloppy about it, mm-hmm. That's all.
I've noticed with Postcards for Democracy and the installation that, people have a lot to say. So actually, as you think about that format, one, often people aren't following it. So, we have received this amazing coconut, for example. But also, Beattie and Mark received daily cards from some people who would make these remarkable, beautiful drawings that they'd send every day. And there are things where, as you look at the card, you notice that someone's, constructed this thing by mailing cards daily, but mm-hmm. that it becomes a puzzle for a larger work or where they would fit together. Or so I think people have been using mail art mm-hmm. in ways that sometimes challenge or entertain the postal workers. And, that has been inherently a part of what mail art and postal art has been about historically as well. But
when I had my coffee shop, I used to have a coffee shop in downtown St. Pete, and it was a really large one huge large room, 12-foot ceilings and everything. And a local artist, Jennifer Kosharik, when she was first really kind of fiercely embracing the fact that she was an artist, asked to do a postcard show there. And that was a requirement that you couldn't just draw on a postcard. It had to be mailed. And that seemed the idea of having art go through all these different machines and hands and end up in someone else's place has always been a very romantic gesture for me, just the idea that it's this very physical, tangible thing that has to be carried by people and machines to achieve its purpose. And I don't know that there's a lot of other arts that have that.
Also because I think it has its own time frame. Today we're so used to getting instant feedback and communications and sort of gratification, but having something that, you don't even know if it's going to make it to the location, or you don't know if you're going to get anything back, and then something arrives, and it's so, serendipitous or magical or out of, again, that kind of linear time and space that a lot of us operate within. I think that's part of the magic. It has this physical journey, as you said. It kind of tells this story, but it also takes us into a different time and space that we sort of got disconnected from for being so connected,
Mm-hmm. And there was, I've been stuck on reading, not stuck, it hasn't been torture, but I've been, for this pandemic, for some reason, I've been focused on reading books that are all written in British writers, mainly British women writers, between 1900 and 1939 or so. And I've probably at this point read 100 books from there. And it's really interesting about it's so remarkable. Well, they'll write letters and people will get them like that afternoon because they had delivery four times a day because there was no, that was it. That's all they had to communicate with these people driving mail around the UK. And again, just another romantic way of holding someone. Somebody had to make that. Somebody had to write on it. And it's just really delightful. Has everybody been in the gallery when all the postcards are up? Or you can't have all the postcards up. But have you been physically in the space with 100 postcards around you and up?
I have.
Yeah, I mean, and even just here when we were sorting through them, you know, we had all of the cards in boxes, and we were basically like the, you know, mail sorters for a day. And
we were the final sorters.
Yeah, we were. And I think the thing that's so remarkable is really, you know, when you think about how digital everything is now, to have something that represents this kind of physical time capsule through undoubtedly one of the most, you know, historic years. I mean, 2020 is going to become one of, even 2021. And so to have this sort of physical, you know, this physical kind of connection with what we all went through that we can kind of look through like this calendar of events and personal reflections and feelings and obviously societal ones and political ones. I think that's the part that I think is so amazing. You know, imagine in 40, 50, 60 years time or whenever, if there is still a planet or a human species, you know, you find this great trove of all these cards that really captured what we were all going through as this, you know, random kind of physical installation.
We are also sort of discussing a celebratory finale, which is in kind of the spirit of Rauschenberg, that would have to do with sending some of these things, or actually all of them, in some form of documentation to space. So that's something that we haven't confirmed yet, but we're working towards.
So. That'd be awesome to get into space.
And I do have the address, too, which you can post, but it's 8760 Sunset Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90069. And that's Postcards for Democracy. If people want to send postcards, we encourage it.
And dear listener, I will add that to both the Art in Your Ear Facebook page and the Art in Your Ear page on WMNF. And you can please follow the Art in Your Ear page so you know what's going on. I know that we're starting to run short on time. I have so many other questions to ask you, but going to the postcards, I assume that there are a lot of postcards that were covering sort of contemporary issues in there, as BT was just kind of talking about, that there was about Black Lives Matter and COVID and, you know, the president at the time and stuff like that. Were there any surprises? Like, I'm going to say, of course, like the coconut and unusual that way, but were there also sentiments or after looking at many, many different things, takeaways that you hadn't anticipated from this project? Things that sort of like, oh, wow, we didn't even think about that.
I think we, and Mark, I'm sure, will have a different perspective or comment, but I think the thing that I really felt buoyed by was just how many people who'd start off saying, I'm not an artist, but, you know, I made so many cards for this project. And you realize that sense of everyone getting involved and actually people discovering their creativity. Because I kind of think I'm not an artist is a bit BS. You know, I think we all have creative capacity, obviously in different ways. And so having a lot of people kind of connect with that, and then get really into it, that they were sending cards, you know, kind of frequently, and you could see this interesting, you know, personal timeline or development, and some really heart, you know, some really kind of touching messages. Like one person I know was having a lot of health issues and had a real close call, and, you know, he wrote to say that this project was sort of keeping him, you know, sane, really, and inspired. So that kind of stuff, I think, is what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. Mark, did you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, you know, it was like what Beattie said. It's like all the personal messages where people told you a little bit of something about their life. That was kind of great, because every day we're opening up the mailbox and dumping a stack of cards on the reception room table, and you'd see everything. You'd see every kind of age group, every kind of political bent, every kind of artist quality. Like she said, there was some people that like made some really cool stuff, and they just didn't even consider what they were doing to art. But it's like when when they got down to it, they did something great. And it seemed like maybe it was a little to our advantage that everybody was locked down last year because they there was a lot of people that put a lot of time and care into the things they sent. And it was every day was amusing.
That sounds great. That sounds great. Well, Jade, this project is up for how much longer?
It's up until August 8th, actually. Yeah, so we've got a few weeks.
Got here. A few weeks. Okay, yeah. Well, I'm hoping to drive down and see it. And I'm wondering if there's anything, Mark and BT and Jade, what's next in coming up for you? We've got Postcards for Democracy. Is there something that you're working on right now that you want to let people know about or something coming up you would like our listeners to know about? You can say no.
I am doing, artwork for museums and galleries, but I score film to pay for that kind of in a way. And so there's that going on, but I'm kind of seeing what's going to happen. Devo is scheduled to play four shows. We signed on before the pandemic to play these four concerts, and my voice got damaged. My vocal cords got damaged by the ventilator when I was in ICU
from COVID.
And, and I'm still trying to get it back, like the upper range. It's like I can't quite sing some of the notes that I absolutely need for all these songs I wrote when I was 25.
So
we'll see. I'm working on it. I think we're still going to do the shows. I don't think we're going to chicken out.
Don't chicken out.
I might have to get like one of those Devo cover bands. I'll get the singer and we'll like
have him backstage
Or have an outfit with two heads and three legs.
You know, I have, here at our radio station every month have a theme that we play songs that reflect our mission. And for the month of July, our mission is pro-peace and anti-war songs. And so I have, for closing out the show today, Devo's version of Ohio. Because if that's not an anti-war pro-peace song, I'm not sure what is. What Devo song should I do? And I was like, oh, Ohio. So that's a low song. You could sing that low. BT, do you have anything coming up you want to mention? I do want to, and I am going to post
She's
it.
Busy.
She's busy, yeah.
Oh, okay, she's busy.
Yeah.
She's very busy.
There's one project I will highlight, which it's been kind of, ongoing for the past 2 years now. It was just at the London Design Biennale, and it will be at COP26, the UN Global Climate Summit in November. It's an environmental protest art piece built using 800,000 years of atmospheric CO2 data to really show people, where we are right now, and demonstrate and visualize human impact, which is simultaneously a protest song and kind of reimagining of the music video format. And this interactive version where people can actually move their hand over the weave and pull out the specific carbon PPM and the planetary timeline date just closed at the Biennale, and then that will be what goes on to the UN climate summit. Yeah, I kind of feel like, we got to do all we can in whatever ways we can to kind of activate awareness right now.
I totally agree. And that's called From Green to Red.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
That was up there, and it's on your website. And I shared that already on Facebook, and I'm going to share it again because it's so powerful and so interesting too. That's like a whole nother interview, BT. Just going to have to come back. Jade, what do you have coming up?
Yeah. So
you always have something coming up.
Well, our fall exhibition actually will open late August, maybe the first week of September, but it's a 2-person exhibition, site specific, and actually changing daily. We're doing a kind of experimental residency with the art guys, Jack Massing, who I did a, retrospective with the art guys here at the Tampa Museum years ago, and with William Wegman, who actually was in the same project that Mark came to Tampa for,
right.
Art in the News, actually,
Art in the News.
Back in 1999.
But so, that was part of Art in Your Ear.
That's
Art
right.
in the News was on and Art
so,
in Your Ear.
And
it all goes around.
And so Bill and Jack are going to be making work and have sort of an Epson printer, and they're back and forth, you know, on their phones and taking photographs and having these interesting kind of call and response exchanges that are also about sending instruction to one another
right.
to build things. They've sent objects already to alter and return, and they next week will be together working in the studio for a week in Maine up at Bill's mm-hmm. studio. And then they'll be coming, you know, for at least a month and a half during that time, during the run of the show, to work in, yeah, I'll bring them here too.
And I have to say, and I so appreciate everybody coming here. Thank you so much, Mark and BT, and thank you, Jade. I love when artists collaborate. I love the third artist, you know, that collaboration, that third it in a project like that. And it's just one of my, it's just delightful to have. And I'm so grateful that you all gave our listeners and gave me so much of your time. Thank you very much. We've got your websites up and we'll put everything up. We've been speaking with B.T. Wolf, Mark Mothersbaugh, and Jay Dellinger about the Postcards for Democracy down at the Bob Rauschenberg Gallery at Florida Southwestern State College. It's located in Fort Myers. And all the information is up. You have to go online for rauschenberggallery.com and you can find it. And there you go. Thank you all so much for being here with us today.
Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Having us.
Yes.
Thank you. Hey, bye-bye now.
Bye.
Baby, don't cry now. Just lean on my shoulder. Just take my arm around you. Please don't be sad now. Just talk to me. Cause you can always talk to me. 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 Just talk to me, sister. Just talk to me, baby. Don't be sad. I'm always here for you. No need to shed a tear. Just talk for me. Always talk.
always just lean on me. You can always just talk to me. You can always just talk to me. You can always.
Oh my goodness, how exciting to speak to Mark Mothersbaugh, B.T. Wolf, and Jay Dellinger. And I have, dear wonderful listeners, I still have to raise $200 for Art in Your Ears for the fund drive. We do have more fund driving coming up. So if you would like to donate at least $60 or $5 a month as a Circle of Friends member, I have one of these postcard packets that I can send you. Postcards to Democracy. It's got the poster. It's got everything in it. And I will happily send that to you for the first person that can donate $60 or more to Art in Your Ear. Support for WMNF comes from you, our wonderful members in Rhyming with Miss Ida, specializing in children's rhyming books such as Poor Old Goat, Sad Little Dog, and more. Details on Miss Ida's children books are at rhymingwithmissida.com. And also, I think I said this, but I want to say it again. Thanks to every listener who supports WMNF by donating to us. We will be asking for your support to keep us broadcasting on Monday, July 26th, and Tuesday, the 27th. You can donate early at WMNF.org or by calling 813-238-8001. And yeah, we need $203 to make our goal. Coming up next is the wonderful, wonderful E-Love, and she will be playing fantastic, beautiful music for you as well. And then that is followed by the Live Music Showcase, always featuring a live performance. Later in the afternoon, we have the Rhythm Revival with Marvelous Marvin and Reverend Billy, and that is the roots of rock and roll, gospel, early rock and roll, all sorts. You never know what those guys are going to play. And that's followed by the Soul Party Classic, R&B and Soul. The Soul Kitchen is after that, the Soul Kitchen, which is more sort of a smorgasbord of black-led music styles, R&B, jazz, hip-hop, everything old school. It's really good. And then we finish our night with classic Florida R&B and Florida Soul with the fantastic Flashback Friday. Here's an important message from our board of directors.
This is a message for the Nathan B. Stubblefield Foundation's board of directors. The USF Forest Preserve is home to hundreds of acres of threatened wetland and sandhill habitats, as well as endangered plant and animal species. The preserve also contains at least 9 Native American historical sites and cemeteries. USF is now reviewing proposals to develop this land for economic gain. For information on the petition to stop this irresponsible and irreversible development and how you can help, visit SaveUSFForestPreserve.com.
Quiet nights of quiet stars, quiet chords from my guitar, floating on the silence that surrounds us. Quiet thoughts and quiet dreams, quiet walks by quiet streams, and a window that looks out on Corcovado. Oh, how lovely.
I want to say thank you to everybody that wrote in. Hi, David. Hi, Mark. Hi, Daniel. Hi, Scott. Hi, everybody. Stay tuned for E-Love right after the NPR news. She's dancing to Astrid Gilberto, as she should. Talk to you next week. If you need anything, please do feel free to email me at joellen@wmnf.org or follow us on Facebook, Art in Your Ear, WMNF. And we'll chat then. Take care now. You're listening to WMNF Tampa.
E eu que era triste.